And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. So, I'm really excited about the show today. Ray, make sure your microphone is nice up close to your mouth there. Let's make sure you're... Are you there, Ray?
Yeah, I'm here. Aloha, everybody.
That's Ray Mata. He was on our show a few weeks back, and he was sharing a little bit about Mauna Kea. And let me double-check on you. Marshall, are you in here okay?
Aloha.
Oops, no. Try again.
Aloha.
There you are. Okay, so Marshall is always helping and doing a lot with the phones, too. So, Ray, last weekend I went to Oahu.
Yes.
I went for Sunday and Monday, and I learned a lot. And on Sunday there was something called the Unity March. Were you watching that on TV?
I absolutely was, yes.
So where was that live streaming?
That was OEV TV.
So that's, is that basically Oahu cable television?
I think it's an Oahu-based organization that is streaming these live events for us on behalf of the Hawaiian community. I'm definitely focused on that.
So what this march was about on Sunday was, it was a unity piece between so many different issues. And I want to bring a piece off of OEV TV, which is by Kaho'o Kahi Kanuha. He is one of these new young heroes in this movement, if I must say so myself. You must know him. Is that correct, Ray?
Yeah, I have met him. I met him the first time I went up, actually, when they were up there.
Okay, so I'm going to see if I can bring up his statement at the end of the walk. We went, there was about 10,000 people, and marched down Waikiki on Kalakaua Road, and it was about, I don't know, a mile to 2 miles of distance. It didn't feel super far, but it took a couple hours, and, you know, the word is the front of the line was hitting Kapi'olani Park, the back of the line was just starting. So I saw that the paper put 10,000 people down as the number, and that sounded about right to me. So let's hear what he has to say. At the beginning, he does, in Hawaiian, the history of the islands. But I am kind of going to be moving forward into the English part for the sake of most of our listeners on the air are still yet building the skill of speaking Hawaiian.
Aloha. So, I start off with Mele au Pākui, which tells of the genealogy of our islands, Hawaii, all the way to Ni'ihau, to Kaula, to Lehua. And we know our genealogy. We know where we come from. But we are in a system, we are in a place that at this point is ruled by those who do not know our genealogy, who do not know where we come from, and therefore do not know where we are, and we could never know where we need to go. But we do. We know where we come from. And because we know where we come from, well, we know where we are. And because we know where we are, we know exactly where we need to go. And where we need to go is back to the values, to the practices, to the lifestyle of our kupuna. And that main lifestyle, that main value, that main ideology, in my opinion, is aloha aina. Is aloha aina oia i'o. And what is aloha aina? Is aloha aina signing a list and getting a free t-shirt? Or is aloha aina putting the time in our communities, getting in the mala, getting in the lo'i, getting in the lokui'a, studying our history, living our history, learning the truth, and then becoming the truth? That's what aloha aina is. That's what ea is. And so today when we march, and we march with 10,000 people, right on, awesome, good, And now the question is, what are we going to do with the 10,000 people? We got to take them up to the Mauna. We got to go to Mauna Wakea. We got to go to Haleakala. We got to go to Ho'opili. We got to stop GMOs in Hawaii. We need to take back that air. We as a people. Ialii no ke ali ike kanaka. A chief is the chief because of the people. The chief is the chief because of the people. How many of you told Ige? How many of you told the state of Hawaii? How many of you told the DLNR? How many of you told OHA that they are our chief? So my question is, are they a chief? Ah, olelua, because yali inoki yali ike kanaka. The chief is the chief because of the people. So who is our chief? And he ali ika aina, he kawa ke kanaka. The land is the chief. People are merely the servants. But nothing in the system that we live in today tells us that that is true. There's no truth to that in the way that we live. Systematically. Not individualistically, but systematically. There's no truth in that. And so, what we need to know, the reason why we march, the reason why we have to march, the reason why we have to protect Mauna Kea, the reason why we have to get arrested to stop the desecration of Haleakala, the reason why we gotta stop Ho'opili, the reason why we gotta stop GMOs, is because the state will never do it for us. It's our kuleana. It's our kuleana. And like Brother Lakea was up here saying, yeah, huli kalima ilalo, ola. Huli kalima iluna, make. And we cannot stand here like this any longer. Only Kamehameha can stand like this. We cannot. We need to take it back. We're the only ones who can. We're the only ones who can. We cannot wait here for the state. We cannot stand here and ask for the state, please give us back what we deserve. Please give us back what's rightfully ours. It ain't gonna happen. So we need to take it. And so we need to know that we come from a brilliant people. We need to know our history. We need to know that Hawaii was recognized as the first non-European country in the world at the signing of the Anglo-Franco Proclamation on November 28, 1843 by the King of France and the Queen of Great Britain. We need to know that within 20 to 30 years, Hawaii became the most literate country in the world upon only recently learning a new language and the system of reading and writing. We need to know that Mauna Kea is not ceded lands. How can it be ceded if we never gave it away? How can it be ceded if 122 years later our people still stand on the mountain and still chant and still pray and still have to get arrested for protecting it? It was never given away. So we need to understand these things. We need to realize these things. Those are government lands. They were seized. They were never ceded. How do we know they weren't ceded? Because in 1898, or actually from 1893 to 1898, there's attempts at annexation. We all know our queen was illegally overthrown on January 17th, 1893. We all know that. We all know that. That's the truth. Nobody can tell us differently. Nobody can show us differently. And we know that our queen was astute, was knowledgeable in the laws of her kingdom, the laws of the United States, and international law. And she said, I yield my power. I do not relinquish it. I yield it to the forces of the United States until such time upon the facts being presented to it shall undo the heva. And so we know the facts. Then in 1897, the provisional government, those insurgents, treasonous insurgents who overthrew our government, tried to annex Hawaii to America. And did they succeed? Was Hawaii ever annexed to the United States of America? Only because in 1897, in a time where only 40,000 Hawaiians were alive, 38,000 signatures were gathered protesting the illegal annexation of Hawaii to America. 38,000 out of 40,000. We can't even do that on change.org and facebook.com and petition.com or whatever it's called. 38,000 out of 40,000. So the things that we do, the things we march for, the things we fight for, the things we stand for it because we were given permission by our kupuna. And beyond permission, we were given a kuleana by our kupuna. They gave us a responsibility. And a responsibility is not for us to go and kind of look around and choose what I like do. Ko'u kuleana versus ka'u kuleana. There is no ka'u kuleana. Ko'u. It is something that is bestowed upon us. And so because of the 38,000 of the 40,000 signatures that were gathered, the United States of America was never able to ratify a treaty of annexation between the independent kingdom of Hawaii and the United States of America. So how did Hawaii become the 50th state? Well, simple answer is we never did. But how is there a misconception that we became the 50th state? Because the United States of America, the Congress in 1898, on July 7th, 1898, passed a joint resolution claiming to annex Hawaii to the United States of America. A joint resolution, though, has no power and authority outside of the boundaries of its territory, which Hawaii clearly was since 1843, and way before that, but recognized internationally since 1843. So they have no constitutional power to annex a foreign country. America could no more annex Russia, Canada, China, or Japan today by joint resolution. So what allowed them to annex Hawaii by joint resolution? Nothing. It never happened. And that's why we march today. That's why Mauna Kea faces desecration. That's why Haleakala faces desecration. That's why GMOs are running rampant in Hawaii. That's why our agricultural lands are disappearing. Because we eat of the fruits of the illegal occupier. We suffer an illegal and prolonged occupation. And the only way to change it is for us to come together. And so I encourage everybody, first of all, I mahalo everybody for coming out together today. The estimates are saying 10,000 people. Right on. But that means that there's at least 1.4 million other people in Hawaii who are not here. And we're not going to focus on the negative, but we need to continue to increase our strength. We need to continue to come together. We cannot treat these issues as separate issues. GMO, Mauna Kea, Haleakala, Ho'opili, whatever it is, they all share the same thing at the root, at the core. And that's aloha aina. And the reason why we struggle to protect these places is because we don't have the right to determine for ourselves what should and shouldn't be happening in our place. And so in regards to Mauna Kea, the question is very, very simple. Do we as a people have the right to determine what places are sacred to us? Do we have that right? And if we have that right, then do we have the right to protect those places? And when we think about why is our culture real? They say they need to show our respect for us. Do they treat us as a real people? Or do they treat us as less than human? And so when I see them happily desecrating our lands, it shows that they have no respect for us. They have no aloha for us or our aina. And so the only way for us to, the only way we're going to get change is to create change. And so I mahalo everybody, but I encourage each and every one of us. Okay, we walked a mile or two. Awesome. We came together. But I know a lot of people that can walk 1 or 2 miles. What are we going to do now? What are we going to, let's take this unity and how are we going to use it? And so, I look forward to seeing all of our separate issues coming together. I look forward to seeing all 10,000 people on Mauna Kea, on Haleakala, at Ho'opili, helping and stopping the GMOs, because that's the only way we're going to do it. United we stand. Divided we fall. So let us come together. That was the works of Kamehameha. He made us a unified people. He consolidated the islands. We no longer stand separately. We are one. Anoleila. E imi kako I kapono. Ai hoi hoi kako I keoka aina. Ya Hawaii. Mahalo nui.
Mahalo, bro. Mahalo.
And that was in the words of young leader of this movement, Kaho'okahi Kanuha. And that was at Kapiolani Park at the end of the Unity March. And I wanted just to start off with his statement on, you know, what it's about. You know, this march is about something a lot bigger than the mountain.
Tell us more about your experience over there.
Well, I had a wonderful experience. I have found so far anything I've done with this movement, I feel completely accepted as who I am, which is a Malihini, or I that's not the only thing I am, really. But, I mean, even if I am a transplant to here from somewhere else and all the places I've been or whatever I've been participating in, it is a movement of love. And I want to say that at the end of it, something that was said, not to me, but I overheard, was one of the kapuna, there was a kapuna bus that was running alongside it, and a woman in there was almost crying as she was saying to another person, you know, another woman, she was saying, thank you, tell everybody thank you. She goes, I'm old and I've waited my whole life to see this kind of action, and now I can die in peace. And it was a real tear-jerking moment because it was so said from the heart. And so there was a lot that happened. And what I want to put in here, too, is probably who's listening are some of the directors from the telescopes up on the mountain. And another couple people who work in the construction of creating these, in the engineering part of it. And we give them our love and aloha and appreciation as they're listening into this conversation. I went to the International Astronomers Union Convention there, and that will come up a little bit later in the show, what I learned there. And you know, it's like, how do we move forward becomes this big question. And I have Ray Mata in here because he has so much knowledge to share on this. At one point, correct, you worked at the Subaru telescope on the mountain?
Yeah, I did, as a summit operations technician.
Yeah, and so you were up there, and that was your exposure to the mountain, and then over time you became what's known as a protector of the mountain, or at least a strong support crew person mm-hmm. to this, even and including being there on the very largest day of the arrests, which was when there was about 750 people on July 24th,
mm-hmm.
Standing.
June 24th.
June 24th. Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Okay. June 24th. When that was the time when some rocks were put in the road, but there was a lot of really good, strong strategy that happened. And I invite you in here, Ray, because I think that you have such an interesting viewpoint where you understand both visions and you have experienced it. And knowing that they are listening to you, and if not now, then later they'll be hearing the archive, Can you share? And you watched this parade. There's some pieces. I will bring it back into it later. What was my experience walking? But I want to have you share whatever way you can layer this in together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the first thing I'd like to talk about a little bit is kind of reframing the idea of culture. Instead of looking at this as a conversation about culture and science, or culture or science, or culture against science, looking at science and the people who do that work for us as being a part of our culture, our global culture. You know, if we take a perspective, we kind of start to pull away from the surface and the fences and the boundaries and the colors of our skin and the different jobs that we have and the different running around and all the details that we sometimes get lost in here on the surface, and we kind of step out for a moment, we look at our planet spinning and floating through space. We're one people. We're one race. And in my personal opinion, we are one global culture. And I think we're all kind of struggling to find what that means, and that will take time. That's what human evolution is all about. How are we going to do this together? How are we going to survive on this beautiful place together? And so when I look at the astronomers, they are a part of our people. They provide us with incredible information about our larger environment. And when we look at the environment, it's not just the air and the rocks and the minerals and the rivers and the mountains. It's also our sky and our air and our sun. The weather of the sun affects us. The weather of the solar system affects us. So we have people in place who examine that for us. Those are our astronomers. They look at the rogue planets that might have life on it. You know, I remember when I worked up at Subaru Telescope in the morning when we would arrive, we work during the day And we essentially prepared the telescope for the astronomers. We did the safety checks. We were kind of the grease monkeys and the engineers of the scope, making sure all the parts are moving, the computers are working, et cetera. And what I would see in the morning on the computer monitors, one of the things that surprised me about Subaru Telescope is there's no little eyepiece that you look through, right? It's kind of like the fantasy that I had going up there is, oh, I'm going to look through an eyepiece and there is going to be Saturn and Jupiter and all these awesome, you know, celestial objects. They did actually set up an eyepiece on the secondary mirror for when the Queen of Japan came, and they allowed her to look through that. And I think she looked at Jupiter at the time. That was quite a feat of engineering just to get that to work. But for the most part, the astronomers book their time, and they're looking, we're talking about arc seconds of distance, very, very short distances in our sky, full of information, of light that has been traveling through space, in some cases for millions or billions of years. And what it looks like on the screen is just a blob. I mean, it's very difficult to actually make any real meaning of what you're seeing on the screen as a bystander just kind of looking at it. It doesn't really seem to make any sense. So it takes years and years of research and looking at data to start to make something meaningful of that. And, you know, the meaning that that brings us, I think we're still learning about today. We're still learning about our place in this universe and what all of this data means to me. Personally, is that, see, where I'm coming from with the whole, Mauna Kea and the protection of Mauna Kea and the construction of this telescope, I look at the TMT as an incredible, a marvel of engineering. I mean, the Subaru telescope was an 8.3 meter mirror. It was a huge mirror.
And TMT stands for 30 meter telescope.
30 meter telescope, right. It is the second largest telescope in the world. There's another one that's 39 meters being built in Chile.
And that would be the giant Magellan telescope?
No, that's the extremely large telescope, I think they call it. I forget what the exact name for it is, but I know it's being built in Chile. And so from the perspective of technology and engineering and science, it is amazing. It is an incredible piece of technology capable of capturing light that was formed in the first few million years of this universe. So there's no doubt that we're looking at something that has profound significance to the scientific community. When we start to look at the larger circle of our environment, there are other people sitting at this table. We have our lawyers, our professors, we have our doctors, we have our shamans, our priests, we have our spiritual people, our logical people. We're all part of this circle. So how do we move together? Because we're moving together whether we like it or not. How do we do it in a way that is less about conflict and fight and more about really moving in a direction that is going to take us to the next level of our evolution? When I, you know, hearing the speech of the march there, it brought me to tears right here in the studio. All of a sudden I was just crying because what the emotion that brought up for me was a people that have been here for hundreds of years, thousands of years, the Hawaiian people, and their value system, what is it about? It's about the environment. It's about preserving the resources and the vitality of the environment for the next seven generations, not just for this one. So what I hear them telling us, what I hear them showing us is astronomy and the pursuit of science is a valuable tool. Clearly, it is. The question is, we're also doing a lot of damage to our mother. We're killing off, we're actually entering what's called the sixth mass extinction. It means that the number of extinctions happening within our lifetime exceed the number of extinctions that have happened in all the observed eras of extinctions before us. So when we look at what this movement is telling us, to me fundamentally is about reprioritizing our direction. Where are we putting our energy? Right? Are we gonna put all of this energy into desecrating a mountaintop? Environmental desecration, spiritual desecration, cultural desecration, right? And all the corruption that is being revealed in the government process and the legal process of how this has actually come about over the last 7 years. Is that where we're going to put all of our energy? Or are we going to take a step back and look at the importance of what's happening in our own yards, the GMO, right? The rivers and the health and the vitality of the environment. So it's about kind of putting forward what is going to be most important for us to survive. You know, by the time the data of the 30-meter telescope starts to become meaningful, which isn't about 15 or 20 years from now, okay, where is our environment going to be? Where are we going to be?
And that's a very important question. You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox. This is Felicia, and that is Ray Mata speaking. Continue.
So it's really about, you know, that Kapu Aloha that we're hearing so much about. That's a very special space, something I've learned about as being part of this movement. It's a place where we stand for what is sacred, what is giving us life, what is here to support us in a way that is understanding of other views, in a way that is loving. We're not here to fight. We're not here to stop big construction trucks. We're here to help educate and help other people understand what this is about. And the hope is that through that compassion, through that kapu aloha, through showing them what we're willing to stand for and protect, that they see that as something that's important. Because it looks like they don't see that. It looks like as important and wonderful as the contributions of the scientific community have been for us in advancing us in all these different places, there's only so far we can go with that if our body is sick. If we're looking up and looking up and looking up, we start to float away from the surface. Our body is not connected to the ground anymore. What's happening to the ground? If we're spending all our time looking out and all of this stuff is here, then what's going to happen when we come back into our body? Is it going to be there? Right? So this is about finding balance to me. This is about looking at where these different communities are helping us. The scientific community is helping us so much in so many different ways, and the astronomers are a part of that. The spiritual community, the cultural communities, all these other people, these groups, we're all working together. We all want the same thing, I believe, in the end. The question is, how do we do that, and how do we move forward? And, you know, that's my answer to that, and the reason that I've taken the side, if you will, of standing for the protection of the mountain is not because I'm against these things, that the TMT and the science and the incredible discoveries that await. It's because I believe that we have other matters that are right in front of us, that have been creeping up on us, that we have been sacrificing for the last few decades, that are starting to show themselves to us. There is a sickness in our land and in our people. And if we don't address that first, what comes from the stars and these incredible exploration will be meaningless. We won't even be here to interpret the data. We won't even be able to look at it. So if anything, I'm looking at the future of someday being able to do that, but that's a privilege that we have to earn. We can't just be running to Mars and running into space and running away from the thing that is giving us life. Because if we do that, then, you know, we're going to have to become virtual reality machines in order to survive. And we're not there. We still have bodies. We still breathe oxygen. And while all those things are true, if we don't take care of this honua, this place, this home, we're going to perish. And we're seeing it in our own lifetime. If we can see changes within a generation, then we know there's something up. If things are happening that fast, and we have, you know, a fair amount of data now, data that we've been collecting as human beings, and data that's kept, geological data, glacier data, atmospheric data, solar data that could be found in geological data and glacial data. If we could start to look at the history of what our environment has been doing over the last few million years and look at what impact we're making in this short time, we need to act. This march was about, to me, it's even bigger than sovereignty. It's bigger than culture. It's bigger than all of those things. It's bigger than the people. It's about making sure that the gift of life that we give to our kids is worth inheriting, and their kids and their kids. That to me is what we're doing, and that's why I have so much respect for the movement, because it's really sacrificing a lot to bring that awareness to people so that they can see the importance of that. And it's doing it, you know, through a culture and through a system of people that, from what we can tell, did a very good job of taking care of their environment. You know, a lot of their kapu was about the environment, their environmental laws. You know, when we look at the genealogy and the stories of their creation, we look at a people who look at Mauna Wakea as a family member. That it's actually a family member. Like, it's your uncle. It's your kupuna. This is the person that you would protect if someone was trying to hurt it. So that's difficult for a lot of us to understand. Even myself, I wasn't brought up that way. But I'm starting to understand it, and I have a lot of respect for it. Any group of people that sees the earth as their family and wants to protect it, that to me is something worth standing for. That's something worth wanting to learn more about, you know? And so that's why I'm here. You know, that's my involvement for the Keikis, for the community, for all of us to just become more aware and find balance between these forces of exploration and grounding and environment and astronomy. So, yeah.
And I've only spent one weekend up there on the Mauna with them, and you happened to be there that same weekend, and you've been there a number of others, including that one particular week, when the event happened, where they really were able to effectively stand off the people coming at them.
Right.
And something that I've seen is not only is this movement of young leaders loving, and it's brought forth by teachers. So they have been able to really have a kindness about it, but they're very intelligent and strategic.
Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit about what happened that night?
Yeah, I got up the June 23rd, the night before. I got up there at about 7 o'clock. Got there just around sunset, and there was a meeting, an organizational meeting happening to talk about the strategy for the next day. At that point, there was probably maybe about 150, 200 people. It was sitting down and listening to the strategies that had been thought about by this group, and then there was an open circle for the manau of people who were showing up to say, hey, I think you should try this, I think you should do this. I was amazed at the organizational level. They had really thought it out quite a bit. They'd been spending a lot of time up there. You know, not only are they strategizing and talking about how they're going to do this, but, you know, these people are meeting with the Mauna Kea Rangers. The director of DLNR was there, actually, during the meeting, because he's also part Hawaiian himself. And you can tell he's in clear conflict about his own role in this whole thing. So it's very much an open, transparent space. It's not like this secret little society. You know, it's a group of people who really have education as the priority of what they're doing. You see the Keikis coming up in groups. You see the tourists coming up and learning about what's going on up there. I know when they shut down the visitor station and there was nowhere to go to the bathroom, they were helping the tourists deal with that. In a lot of ways, this group has been critical in observing and upholding the existing laws of that area, actually. This whole area is a conservation use district. And the largest argument against it has been overdevelopment. Now, when I worked up there, 13 telescopes, one of them was already going out, UKRIT. It was already decommissioned. It wasn't even in use. It wasn't decommissioned. It wasn't in use. So there's already quite a bit of activity happening, and there's also a lot of tourism that reaches the summit. So the idea of a 8-9 acre footprint, 18-story building is 30% larger than Subaru Telescope, which is the largest telescope up there. Okay. That footprint and the kind of environment that is up there is, it's violence. If you go up there and you spend time in that place, and you look at the environments that are there, like Lake Waiau, that's not that far actually from the Northern Plateau. So that's actually, of all the different telescopes, TMT will be the closest to Lake Waiau. So there's the argument of the aquifers and all that other stuff as well. But the size and the impact of a development like that in a pristine environment like the summit of Mauna Kea is in and of itself. I think if a regular person who really didn't know much about either side just witnessed it, they would feel it. And I remember seeing some pictures of the construction of Subaru Telescope that recently came up. I saw it on Facebook.
I saw it, too.
Did you see that?
Yeah, and yeah. It is significant when they say there's almost nothing. It's especially in the construction phase. Once it's finished, it's not so shocking.
Right.
But when you see the depth and what goes on under the ground, it is shocking.
It's quite a bit. And we're also talking about, you know, I mean, I can go on and on. I don't know where you want to go with this, but
well,
there's so many details.
I guess, you know, maybe just for 2 or 3 minutes, tell us what it felt like the day of on June 24th.
Okay.
And what you saw.
Okay. We organized.
Because I want to say that when they made this emergency set of rules for imminent public harm.
Right.
you were there.
Yes.
What did you see?
Okay. So after we concluded the meetings of the evening, those of us who were there, we stayed there. And that really meant staying in our car where it was parked in the normal parking lot that they have that's there.
And it's very cold.
It is very cold. My strategy for dealing with that was I went down to the mountain to Pu'uhuluhulu. I did some prayer and some ceremony myself down there. And then I took the ride up to just heat the car to no end. Basically, I turned it into an oven, and I let that heat slowly dissipate through the night. And then we woke up about 4 o'clock. We all met at 4 o'clock in the morning because we knew that the police officers and the DLNR and the construction crews are going to be coming up the mountain at 6 a.m. sharp. And so we organized, and we went over the strategies of the evening. At this point, there's maybe now the numbers of people are increasing. It's 250, between 250 and 400 people now, and that number kept increasing throughout the day. We gathered in circles, and the organization was, I thought, great. It was very simple. About 13 lines. Each line had what they call an alakai, a leader, who was part of the core protector group, who understood what was happening in the mountain, knew some of the rangers, knew some of the DLNR, can deal with conflict and hold the space. And it was never, there was never any instruction to, get arrested or, you know, hold the line at all costs. If an arrest was imminent, the instruction was very clear. Break the line and go to the back. There's 13 lines, and they're separated by about 50 to 100 yards. So if you feel like an arrest is going to happen and you're holding that prayer space, break the line and move to the back. And, of course, things don't always happen that way. Things get a little messy and emotional. Our line was the first line at the very bottom of the mountain. Our job was to meet each police officer, ask them to stop, and give us their name and badge number. That is a legal right that we all have because they're going to be coming up and doing what they need to do. So we were there to document that process, and that actually ended up being something very worthy because one of our observers had their foot run over, and we had a few police officers that weren't quite so cooperative, and we needed to bring that to the attention of the local police department. So after that process was over, we went up, went through the lines. At this point, the construction crews were there. Everybody was up there. All the lines were forming, and the chanting and the prayer and the ceremony and the energy of the place of protection was definitely very much in the air. Our line proceeded to go toward the back. We're basically on our way to the summit. to hold that line if it gets up there. We stopped at about the 1 mile marker because that's where things seemed to feel right. And we just watched and participated and talked and shared with the different lines as we went up the mountain, and watched the lines hold and slowly break. And then I would say at about 11 o'clock, things started moving a little bit more quickly. And we started seeing people coming up from the lines, you know, and started hearing the stories. And part of what was happening is the lines were breaking faster. The officers were getting frustrated. They were starting to push. They were starting to rest without warning. Things were starting to get messy. There were more arrests happening. And, you know, at this point, that movement, that charge that the DLNR, who has their jurisdiction over state land,
the Department of Land and Natural Resources.
So their police force was coming up, and you know, in their duties, they're starting to overstep some of their boundaries and kind of do things in a way that wasn't so Pono. And so we were hearing these stories, both sides coming up the mountain, and we started preparing ourselves. We started preparing our line, preparing ourselves for them to, you know, have to deal with us when they came. By that point. We're starting to approach noon, and this has been happening now since 6 a.m. So there is quite a confluence of different energies, and you can tell that the feeling was with them moving the way they were moving, we had to stop them. So many of us, myself included, we just, that call that comes from the space, that comes from the mountain, it comes from the kupunas and the rocks, right? The spiritual energy that's around you says, okay, these rocks that are here, they are for you to put on the road to make it so that these people cannot pass. And we did that. We built rock walls. We brought the rocks in different places. Once that movement stopped. Clearly, you can see that they weren't going to be able to come up, and it was late in the day. They gave up and they turned around. At that point, what was happening was there were still people that were within our own group who were at the summit who were coming down. A shuttle that was moving food and water and some other groups. And so what we started doing is started putting the rocks back. We started clearing half the road, so that the road could be passable. So by the end of that day, you could safely move, by the end of the first day, you can safely move a vehicle from the bottom of the road all the way to the summit. And that was done, right? The Mauna Kea Rangers went up there. The DLNR went up there. Several telescope observing, people went up there.
Personnel.
And we also helped them come down. So the imminent peril and danger and shaming that we felt was being done was inaccurate. And I think that it was a reaction that most of the people that were not there had. I mean, the idea of rocks coming off the mountain and going onto the road, that creates an image in our minds. You know, and I can see why people would think that that's what it was like, that maybe there was danger, or maybe there was people throwing rocks at cars and stuff like that, you know, because as soon as rocks start to move on the road, you really don't understand unless you're there. And so within the next few days, the groups that had put the rocks on the road stayed on the mountain and volunteered and helped the Mauna Kea Rangers put them back into their places. So the road was safe for travel, within that week, by Friday, actually. So, you know, it's at that point for me and a lot of the people that were up there, we saw how these agencies reacted. And we started to see through the reaction that they were having what their priorities were, what they wanted to do, what they wanted to prioritize. Not only did they close the road off and close the visitor center, they also started blocking anybody from going up there except for the telescope maintenance crews. So, you know, there was a conversation going back and forth. Well, if it's so dangerous, how can they go up? Why can't other people go up? And all these different discussions that go back and forth. But that is the energy that was there and what happened from my perspective.
Thank you, Ray Mata, for helping us have a really clear understanding of what happened on that day, June 24th, on Mauna Kea. This is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. I am Felicia, and we are discussing Mauna Kea, also what happened with the Unity March this weekend. And I want to shift the focus a little bit over to, you know, the astronomers and what's happening up there. Because as you spoke about having conflict or feeling conflicted over the science, you know, and how that works with Aloha Aina, how we care for the land, how both are important, it's critical to look at what piece is more imminent. When I went to the International Astronomers Union Convention, I could see that they're very good people, too. Yeah. And, you know, that you know, they have their own conflicts in it. They don't go into a field like this to be hurting the earth.
Right.
They go into a field like this with a sense of wonder and joy and, you know, a beautiful desire to be learning and sharing and, you know, being like an explorer, a scout, a navigator
right.
that is bringing the rest of us, you know, together with a new awareness. So I did go. I got a press pass the next day. I went to...
This is after the march or before?
This is after the march. I went on Monday. Mm-hmm. And actually on Sunday, I think that was a day that was a break. And I did notice, like, on the news, I mean, I was happy that the paper gave a strong number. I'd say 10,000 is probably pretty close to accurate. You know, it was up high like
yeah.
that. On the news, you know, in the perky little happy voices, you know, they say, oh, hundreds of people came out, you know, for a march and, you know,
right.
got it over with in 30 seconds to a minute, at least of what I saw.
Right.
Totally glossed over any of the significance of what it was about. I saw that, you know, at the Astronomers Convention, it really is an international convention, and it really is truly astronomers sharing and brainstorming and cross-pollinating what they're learning in their own research.
Right.
And so, you know, a number of them had no idea. They hadn't heard about it. I, you know, made a couple, just when I was in calm conversation with people, I would speak to that a little bit, you know, and many of them didn't know, but I did notice, like, down on the bulletin board, they had, you know, in different languages, the translations of what had happened the day before. There was an effort from the people putting on the event.
Right.
It was at the Hawaii Convention Hall, first time I've ever been there. Pay a lot of taxes, you know, we all do
right.
to help keep that going, so it was actually good for me to actually experience it. And I where these were being put up, the notes and different pieces, it happened that it was two directors of different telescopes that were there. And if you're listening, guys, nod to you from the Gemini telescope and the Canada-France-Hawaii telescope. That one was there also. And I went into the press conference and listened to what was out. And, like, most of these, I went into a few of the lessons, the workshops, and they're, you know, very nuanced pieces of science. So they're learning about, you know, certain very detailed pieces.
Yeah.
you know, so very detailed pieces. I know I've got a caller holding. I will take it in a moment. But so I just got slightly distracted by that for a second. So sorry. They were putting a lot of attention to it. I went to a press release. The headline of it was "The Universe is Dying." I have to say that's a little bit dramatic, and I think they know that. It's not imminent, so you don't have to really worry. We have about 87 billion years to go, so I think it's going to work for us. But it was talking about it, how it's declining in its energy outputs, or, you know, basically the photons are slowing down, and in that 100 billion years from when they can work on when it started, they're all supposed to be somewhat extinguished. Though, you know, I mean, it really does beg the question on either end. Where these photons are going, by the way, is into holes of dark energy and dark matter. I'm going to take this call, and then I'm going to share a little bit about the science that was there, and my intention in doing that is to really give some credence to, okay, what are these guys doing?
Right.
And, you know, what are they so passionate about? And they are passionate, and they seem like good people, and, you know, like I said, people from all over.
Yeah.
Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. Aloha, Ray. This is Victoria. Ray, I have a question for you. You stopped the TMK from going up the mountain on June 24th, and I applaud you and all of those folks. My heart was with all of you. What is happening right now, 3 months later? How far have they progressed? Have they progressed? And what's going on with that? I'm kind of in the dark about what's happening right now.
Okay, we'll take that answer, and then we're going to kind of come back to some of the basics that we're, and we'll be exploring more of that a little bit later, but we'll take that answer. Thank you, Victoria.
Great. Thanks,
Lisa. So the TMT.
So what's going on now? Well, nothing.
Construction has not started.
There hasn't been anything since that day other than the reaction, you know, from the government and the agencies and the emergency rules and everything. They opened the visitor center.
And they turned the plumbing back on. And that those emergency rules is the Board of Land and Natural Resources did imminent rules to protect against, I mean, emergency rules to protect against imminent public harm.
Right.
So they can arrest somebody with a blanket or
a tent or tarps.
You know, it's pretty broad. And I actually want to speak to those rules for a moment. The rules went really heavy into hunting. There, you know, they chose to use the hunting rules, and that's how they were able to get in there and to define what was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically they created laws to have these guys actually be breaking something. And it's tough because they're basically exercising their First Amendment rights, their rights to assembly and freedom of speech, and then Hawaii Rule Status HRS 12, where it is the right to spiritual freedom and to practice their customary rights of the Hawaiian nation. But what I learned when I was on this trip, and forgive me for not having the details right in front of me, I will go deeper on that on another show, is at the same time that they did these Board of Land and Natural Resources rules, similar rules were passed for the Native American tribes. Very, very similar rules. So that was really interesting because it is a containment.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of effort right now in the Department of Interior to define the Hawaiian people as not a nation, but a tribe.
Right.
And so that's a piece of conflict, but I need to research deeper of why did all these rules come across the nation at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this was a provocation to stimulate it, but it was something that happened nationally, not just locally.
Right.
So that was a pretty big piece. There was one set of arrests both on Haleakala, Maui, on the same night, as up on Mauna Kea. Again, I have to say, I think the Department of Land and Natural Resources rangers have been pretty good with how they have treated the people that are protecting it. And they gave them, you know, days of notice, and then they came up and they did an arrest. They arrested seven people.
You know, the only thing that was unusual about that, Felicia, was not only did it happen on the same night, because, you know, there was a few weeks there where the DLNR could have come up and arrested those people on Mauna Kea. It happened at 2 a.m. on the same night as the arrest that happened on Haleakala. Now, 2 a.m., why not 10 p.m., 11 p.m.? Why in the middle of the night? There was something about that that didn't sit well with me. I don't want to go too much further into it, but the timing of it and the time of it seemed a little unusual to me.
Well, why?
Well, I mean, you know, and I saw the video footage of the arrests that were happening.
Me too.
Yeah, and no, it was just, It just felt disrespectful. You know, it felt outright just kind of, I could see where, you know, the people who are holding that vigil by law cannot be arrested. Okay, so that's an issue that
by
they have
spiritual
to do.
Law. I mean, a law on spiritual customary practices.
Right, exactly. And constitutional law of the state of Hawaii.
Right.
Okay. So that's why they're still up there. And that's why they're allowed to be up there now, right? So it's when they want to arrest. It's when they think it's appropriate to arrest. And at this point, it's like, well, why are you doing this? And why are you doing it at 2 a.m.? In the middle of the night when these people are either in vigil or sleeping? I mean, you know, why not, like, closer to 10 o'clock, a little more respectful? You know what I mean? I don't know. There was just something about that didn't sit well.
Oh, okay. I guess you have more faith in the system than me. That's what I expect is shock and awe, you know?
Right,
That seems to be, I would say, the strategy of the day. And it's been actually remarkable that they haven't been worse.
Yeah.
They arrested 31 people the same night at Haleakala.
Right.
I mean, there is a solar telescope going up there in Maui.
Yeah.
And I think that halfway through, and it's probably feeling like, oh my gosh, you know, this situation is hemorrhaging, and let's get them both. And
right.
That seemed they're a little less practiced at the Kapu Aloha there, and they had their arms PVC piped together,
mm-hmm.
and so they had to kind of forcefully lay them down and be sawing through this PVC pipe with their arms in it. We will take a call right after we hear from our underwriters. Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man, 808 Equipment Rental, and Anahola Cafe.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters. The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456.
808 Equipment Rentals, providing tractor, bobcat, and BCS tiller services island-wide, including pasture mowing, garden bed raising, vegetation removal, terracing, gravel spreading, and more. 808 Equipment Rentals in Molawa'a. 823-1000.
Anahola Cafe, located at mile marker 12.5 on Kuhio Highway, is proud to support KKCR. The Anahola Cafe is a community enterprise of the Anahola Hawaiian Homestead Association and serves Saimin and local cuisine daily from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. 631-4134.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So I believe we have a caller. We will bring them on the air. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Alicia, can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, it's Aurelius. Aloha.
Aloha, Aurelius.
Hi, so I just wanted to jump in. The show is so amazing, and I never want to take up too much of your time, but just want to thank and redirect your guest's name is, I want to say?
Ray.
By the way, thank you for all your mana'o. I'm so honored to have access to a radio station that has you on it, my brother.
Mahalo, thank you.
Wow. To have eyes on that scenario. So, you know, as Felicia knows, I'm a friend of the Aina, and I wanted to thank you for bringing that focus into how, you know, the Hawaiian people, along with all other Polynesians and really all other indigenous people, all had such a great respect for the stars and the science of the stars and how it matters what's going on up there. You know, but, you know, to sacrifice sacred ground. Like, the Hawaiians never no need no more telescopes. And so as a friend of the Aina, what I want to offer, and this is because I have access to the scientific community because my father is a physicist. And what I want to see more of, what I hope that you can help with, Ray, is the fact that we have the Hubble telescope, and I'm bringing you two, Felicia, in. It sees 13.5 billion light years to the edge of the universe. We already have a telescope in space that can see back to the edge of time. And it is constantly taking pictures of things that happened, like you said, light that has been traveling through space for billions and hundreds of billions of years. And we still get this argument that, hey, it's science, and don't you want to educate the people? And so I just wanted to, like, keep that focus in the orbit that, you know, there's no argument that any land-based telescope can give us any more information than we already have.
Well,
we already have pictures of galaxies that were formed billions of years ago.
I want to thank you, Aurelius, and I will... I've got another caller holding, but I will, okay, Ray wants to say something, and that was the kind of questions I was asking some of the scientists that are there. These ones were from Australia, and they did this presentation on the universe is dying, but
okay,
they answered all kinds of questions.
Quick. I'll be on standby, and I'll get off as soon as you're ready for the next caller. Yeah, Ray, what were you thinking?
Well, you know, I'm going to put on my astronomer's cap for that one. And it, you know, what's happening, Hubble's been up there for 25 years. I think it's a $2.5 billion project, and it has given us remarkable insight. At the same time, I believe it's a 6-meter mirror. The truth is that a larger mirror will give us more information. There's no doubt. And Hubble is not quite looking that far back. It's not going to the very edge.
Okay, I agree with you there, Ray, but I have to resubmit. The universe, the known universe, is only 16 billion years out. So while we're still getting pictures from 14 billion years ago, there's no way to really, you can't say there's 140 billion years of pictures to take. It's not, it's simply not out there.
I can speak to this too. And Aurelius, I'm going to take that offline for a moment. I'm going to let the next caller hold for a moment because I'm expecting a scheduled caller that has some mana'o on these things, but
okay, great.
So I'm going to take you
off.
Sending
aloha, you guys.
Okay,
thank you,
aloha.
Aurelius.
So I did ask these questions.
Yeah.
And okay, they have spectroscopes in these telescopes, and they have telescopes all over the world, and each one has got really a different design to it. So they're looking at different parts of the light spectrum. The larger the mirror, the more layers that they have that they can be looking at. It's like, this is my word, not their word, but it's, to me, it's like when you look at something in high definition as opposed to really a light amount of pixels.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
when they're looking really with this very large mirror, they can see what's called the, I'm looking at my notes here as I'm talking about it, the chemical signature of the other planets. So they can tell what is surrounding the other planets. With a small mirror, you can see, okay, there's a planet. You might be able to take a picture of it.
Right.
And you might have a visual picture, but that doesn't mean that you know what kind of atmosphere it has on it and
right.
what kind of metals it's made up of. And so they're also, with this 30-meter mirror, they're able to explore, you know, the dark matter and the dark energy. This is part of the goal. Now, it's not up there yet. It might not work. And this is what was in agreement from everybody there is that the Big Bang, as they're saying, they don't really explain what happened before the Big Bang, and I think that that is the billion-dollar question, but that happened 13.7 billion years ago. So they're not looking at 140 million years ago. They have this really amazing imagery of a sampling of 200,000 galaxies that they had all in 3D and that they'd been looked at, and what they do with the planet and what's out in space is every telescope is looking and measuring these things from a different point of view
right.
with a different type of lens.
Right.
And so it's like putting on 3D glasses, but
exactly.
in this case you're putting in, you know, multidimensional
right.
glasses on them, and they can look up close, and they're learning things like when there's a supernova that is past its time. What's that called again? When it's falling apart. Anyway, they can see after the big explosion of the supernova, it still has planets running around it. Mm-hmm. You know, I would think everything would get all burned up, and it doesn't. And they had all kinds of stuff that they're looking at, like binary stars where the planets are going around both the stars,
right,
and
right.
You know, all kinds of
interesting stuff.
Interesting stuff. I've got pages here of what I heard and what I looked at, and you know, so I got it that it's not just, you know,
yeah,
seeing the edge of the universe. They're looking at all kinds of things in between. But when you were speaking earlier, I think you said it so eloquently. What if we're not here in 15 years,
right,
to be looking at that, you know? And my whole life I've been thinking, okay, somebody's been telling me the sky is falling. But in the words of Jackson Brown, just don't think it won't happen just because it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
You know, really what is being called for is in fact happening. What we were warned about in second grade and again in college and, you know, again all along the way, those indicators are occurring.
Right.
And they're coming faster.
Yeah. One indicator that I'd like to point our listeners to, I was just in Texas for 2 weeks visiting my father. Yeah, I look at this massive flat plateau out there, the high desert, and I just see thousands and millions of people spread out across this urban area. And what I see, I'm asking myself, where are these people getting there? Where is the water coming from if it's not coming out of the sky? So part of what we're dealing with, and I'll just point the listeners in this direction, is a lot of the water supply that is being consumed on the planet right now, California included, is well water. Water that has been recharged for thousands, maybe even millions of years. Now, that recharge rate, we don't really know about exactly, but the consensus is that the amount of time it takes for that to be recharged and replenished is a lot longer than the rate that we're actually demanding out of it. So we are consuming our well water resources faster than they can be replenished. And just, you know, just to look at one example of something that we're doing here on this planet, we don't even know how much water we have left under the under the ground, and how much longer that's going to last us. But we can see from what's happening just in California alone, the impact that that's having on our agriculture, on businesses, on even us here, because we take so much import from there. So it's exactly that kind of lack of foresight. It's like, okay, we're going to allow all of this draw to happen from an area that takes so long to recharge. That is only in the interest of profit. That's only in the interest of the now. What about, you know, what about our kids? What about the next few generations?
And let's put some blame where it belongs. It's in the interest of the person who wants to wash their car in their front yard or have grass in their front yard or wash their long curly hair.
Right.
Who is that? For a long time in the shower. So it's not just the people who are profiting. It's us that are spoiled with our habits. We have two callers who've been patiently holding. We'll take them very quickly, okay, and then we'll come back to this. Aloha. Thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Felicia, and your wonderful guest.
Hello.
Hello. You know, I don't think it was so eloquent what he said about, you know, we won't be around here to read this scientific information. It's more stark and grim and sad as well. But, you know, I don't think the DL Knower wakes you up, rouses you up 2 a.m. in the morning because they're conniving, malicious, and underhanded. I think it's just about that they get overtime pay. And that's a joke. Have a nice day.
Thank you. Okay, we have another caller. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, is that me?
It is you.
I wanted to say a couple Sundays ago, a week ago Sunday, I guess it was, I was watching, I think it was 60 Minutes, and I called the Antinani program, I think it was on Monday, and reported it the next day, but it talked about this Space Command, and it's a real program that's going on. And I saw some of these telescopes or laser-type buildings that they had in California that they were showing. And you know, it's more than just a telescope. I'm very suspect of truly what's going on there because there's this program Space Command, and you can Google it.
Well, I did ask about those lasers. I actually asked a number of questions, very specific, and one of them was on the lasers, and I said about the 60 Minutes piece and where it showed something that looked like the TMT and opening up, and these lasers come out. And, in fact, they do have lasers. It is a low-power laser. They say so low power, a person can put their hand in front of it, and it is wide as it comes out. And what they do is they hit the sodium layer 90 kilometers above the Earth. And so when they do that, it's a way of calibrating, and it helps to take the distortion out of how the viewpoint is going through the atmosphere. So I'm sitting there reading my notes. That's why you're hearing this pause. And Ray is nodding his head, so maybe you can answer that. But they did say, yes, we have these lasers, and they come out, and what they do is they help us calibrate what we're looking at. Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, you know, I know what she's talking about. I did see there's one article actually that I saw running around on Facebook for a while, what I believe was actually being pushed by a very strong troll that was trying to sort of hype up an emotional reaction from the Hawaiian community that the telescope is also being used for military purposes. Because we don't know the answer to that question, we can only speculate. And it's, you know, it's not without, it's certainly probable, it's a possibility that there could be some use of the telescope for that. But my understanding is in alignment with what Felicia learned at the conference. These lasers are being used to calibrate for atmospheric distortion. They use the lasers to help deal with image distortion as light comes through our atmosphere. So, you know, I believe that's the primary reason for my experience and knowledge, but I don't want to discount the possibility that there are other uses, for those lasers in calibrating space targets, for example, or satellite calibration for, ground missile tracking. That's all part of the space program. That's a very real threat in the world.
For what it's worth, I directly asked that. Now, it could be that they don't tell me the truth.
Right.
But they said no, not so.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure that comes out.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you do get a truthful answer asking that. Not that they're not truthful. I mean, you know, the thing is, I saw this special on Space Command. It's a very real thing. There's underground cities practically with employees that are all military that are monitoring satellites in the air, and their fear is that somebody, Iran or China, might be shooting down some of our satellites because there's thousands of satellites that they're floating around in space. So it was my understanding that the lasers had something to do with maybe shooting at somebody that might be shooting at our satellites.
I asked him directly that because I saw the same thing, and they said, you know, that might well be with different branches of the service. And but like the TMT is in part funded by China and Japan and
India
and people whom we're actually trying to control. So they are a partner in it.
Right.
So it really they would be people whom we are in conflict with, like at that level of shooting down satellites. So we wouldn't be collaborating on something that would have that capacity, I don't believe.
Yeah, one of the ways we can monitor the amount of power that would be required for a laser to have shoot-down capability is very large. I'm not versed in laser technology at the cutting edge. I don't even know if we have that power yet. The first time I ever saw it was in Real Genius, I think it was, with Val Kilmer. They developed that awesome laser that they used to destroy ground targets from high altitudes.
In the movie.
Yeah.
Fiction.
Highly fictional at the time. But again, I mean, there is one of the things that's happening with the planned construction of the telescope is an upgrade to the power station at Halepohaku. There is a power station. Helco has a power station that transfers power from the grid.
That's the military installation in the neighboring crater. Or caldera. right? Pohakuloa is right there. Is that what you're saying?
No. Pohakuloa is a military installation. Halepohaku is where the visitor station is at 9,000 feet. So that's where power comes off the grid and is supplies the telescopes. So TMT's draw on the grid is so significant that they actually have to upgrade the power station in order to have electricity to manage the scope. So one way to perhaps investigate whether a laser with enough power to shoot objects out of the sky is being used would be to very closely monitor the power upgrade plans, because if they are in a range that surpasses normal telescope operation, then you know there's something else happening there.
That's a great point. Do you have any other questions, caller? I have somebody else holding.
Thank you for the great conversation. Thanks so much. Aloha. Love you.
Love you, too. Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air, KKCR.
Me?
Yes. Hello? Oops, I think we just lost you. Please call right back, 826-7771. And for people who want to look at a website, www.gamma-survey, G-A-M-A-survey, SURVEY.org, is a pretty interesting one. That's the one where it's got those the mappings of that 200... galaxies,
right.
And as it's kind of floating back into, you know, the origin. We have another caller. Aloha, you're on the air. Are you the one I dropped?
Hello.
Hello?
Yes, I'm on the air.
Yes, you are.
Okay. Yeah, I just read on the internet that they were privatizing the high altitude oral research project, which is called HARP 2. It takes a billion watts of power to run it. And they're selling it to a private corporation now. And I've been listening on the radio, and I keep hearing the word military. And that reminds me of one president who said, beware of the military-industrial complex.
That would be President Dwight Eisenhower in his Aloha speech, yes, as he was leaving office.
Right. And industrial denotes like corporate, in my mind. Because that's, you know, that's pretty much where our focuses are nowadays, is on the corporate realm, especially in the courts. And it's really hard to talk about it because I love my country and I love the people in this country and they're really awesome. But we're being suppressed, and I think it's a good idea to question our authorities on their constitution and whether or not they really are paying attention to the constitution that is like a contract between us and our creator. It's to protect the people who are his children. And we're all children, and even the really young ones nowadays are our children too. You know, they're all, it's a continuing cycle that seems to be getting interrupted.
Well, thank you for that reminder on the importance of looking at the erosion of our constitutional rights. That is a pretty consistent theme on the show.
It would be good to, if you see a policeman or a politician, ask them and train yourself on your constitutional rights that so we can keep them. Because if you don't know them, it's like, you know, you don't know your neighbor. You know, you need to be apprised of those things, and it's good to question them and to see where they're at.
Thank you,
if
and I have my.
That to you,
thank you. I have my handy dandy copy of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the. I smile because when I'm talking to sometimes political people, I'll pull it out and I'll start looking and they just, you know, wince a little bit. And the Declaration of Independence is very small. It fits in your purse, easy, your backpack, whatever. When you look at any bill that comes out now, you know, it's like two copies of the New York phone book. Thank you so much, caller. I have another call holding. Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha, KKCR, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Felicia.
Hello.
Aloha from Oahu.
Oh, hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. I think I recognize your voice.
Yes, you do. So interesting conversation so far. I just like to make a contribution to say this, that as a native Hawaiian, we are capable for speaking for ourselves. and that we are not an ancient culture looking to present some anthropological ancient form of wisdom. We are a contemporary people in a contemporary world, and we are fully aware of our social, political, and economic construction relative to Mauna Kea and the other conditions that have been introduced by, as we refer to, as either the others or the intruder. So for point of reference, so you might understand where I'm coming from in a short bio, I'm from the 70s generation. I'm a native Hawaiian, educated on the continent, and look for a place here in Hawaii because this is the land of my ancestors. All the men in my family, their bones are buried in this aina. So my lens is a lens of not necessarily entitlement, but a lens of authenticity. So with all respect to the science conversation, their impressions and their assumptions that may be accurate, they're not authentic when you speak to Hawaii. So within that, within the entire scientific contribution here in Hawaii, there's also a condition of merit if what they're doing does provide merit.
Right.
And I believe that the tone nationally, meaning for the continent,
right,
is that people are questioning the meritorious efforts of what is being suggested, not only nationally, but internationally. Greece, for example, and their problematic financial condition, and whether or not Kamehameha schools in their investment through Goldman Sachs in 1991 eventually led to the demise of what the Greeks are experiencing now. Only to say this. As Native Hawaiians, we're not in an isolated box or a closet. We are very much in the national scene. To what degree that we're out there is a function of who is managing our assets. And unfortunately, we are not managing our assets. And one of our assets is Mauna Kea, for this very basic point of fact of evidence.
Yeah.
We name that mountain. It's not called Mount Hood or Mount Rainier. It's Mauna Kea. We name that mountain. And so now when we speak to the jurisdiction as to who has jurisdiction over that mountain, you have to ask yourself this. How is it that these foreign countries are operating within the United States, if you see Hawaii as part of America? How are these foreign countries operating within the United States without the presence of the State Department? Nowhere in the continent can a foreign country do business in America without the presence of the State Department. So if the argument is made that this 30-meter telescope will help us to see billions of light years into the future, how is it that it fails to see the clear condition that's being expressed right at its doorstep, right there on the Big Island? Why is that? So that what we do know, that the 200,000 acres of ceded land that was the property of the Native Hawaiian public people of the three parts that was submitted for our territorial jurisdiction under the land, a third going to the king, a third going to the nobles, and a third to the private people, the average Native Hawaiian, that land now expresses itself through the Department of Hawaiian Homes Commission, which is a state of Hawaii agency, which has adopted federal legislation, the 1920 Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, into the state constitution, which allows them to manipulate the ceded land of 200,000 acres for Native Hawaiians. And in doing so, they took the prime land on all the states and swapped them for lesser valued land. The lesser valued land that surmised this land swap ended up on Mauna Kea. So if the University of Hawaii has a land lease, who did they get this land lease from? Department of Land and Natural Resources or Department of Hawaiian Home Lands? That's Hawaiian Homes land. And that's why foreign countries are doing business on the mountain without the presence of the State Department, because technically it is not America. Now, that's a matter of fact. And so for whoever's listening to this, I encourage you to do that research and ask yourself, call the State Department and ask them, why are they not on Mauna Kea? In concert with the TPP that's going on, these
Trans-Pacific
are the same countries
Partnership.
That are investing in the Mauna Kea expression. Why? Because of what's going on nationally? No, because of the global economic condition that the entire world is facing. These issues of global warming, of trade, the GMO situation that you have on Kauai, it's not dreamt up for any other reason other than profit. You have to ask yourself, of all the things that could have been genetically modified, why did they choose food product? They choose food product because the value of food stocks historically has always been consistent with the highest margin of potential for growth and profit. And so these are the products that were exploited. The previous caller who talked about the corporate influence on what's going on is very real. And this is the tenor and this is the attitude that people globally are disenchanted with. So these young people now on Mauna Kea respond to that energy that they have been called. LaMotta, is it Mr. LaMotta?
Ray Mata.
Ray Mata, who was up on the mountain, he also feels this energy from what I gather listening to him. And it's through his lens that he tells his story. But that's his story. That's not anyone else's story but his story. So this energy that resonates throughout the state, that's pushing throughout the world, people are responding. People in New Zealand are asking, why is this TPP impacting us? Why don't we have something to say about it? The entire world is clamoring over this issue that seems to be centered and focused right here in Hawaii. So when we look at these 10,000 people who marched Sunday that simply were saying no, any statistical average will tell you that a population base of 325 people is reasonable to predict some sort of outcome. Well, you had 10,000 people voicing an opinion. That amount of energy cannot go unnoticed. And people are going to appreciate that. So what we have is we have a lot of misinformation that results in a lot of confusion, that breeds a lot of fear, that further results in a lot of illogical thinking. And so what we have is we have people drawing at any sort of inference. Why is this happening? Why is this not happening? And the reality is what? The reality for Native Hawaiians, I tell you, is this. It resides with us. This overthrow is not over with us. We are still protesting. Since 1893, we continue to protest. This notion that you spoke about the stars and the heavens, we name our children for that. We carry this within the construction of ourselves. Our cosmology lives within us. We express that. And so we understand that. So it's not something that we're trying to convince anyone else of. It's the knowledge that we have. It's the way in which we conduct ourselves, which is far different than the others. And here's the example. If you hold your hand in front of your face and you look at the sum of that one hand, what does that say? How much is that? Is that five? Do you see your five fingers?
Yes.
A Maori person sees the spaces between the fingers. We see four. So I argue that if you take all the words out of the narrative and we reduce our words to just the numeric value, our mathematical statement is based upon a base four math system, not a 10. So fundamentally, in terms of value, we conclude a different value by our construction. Now, this is, you know, this theory of mine about a base four math position has been argued at the University of Hilo for some time, but it hasn't taken on the popularity because of the dependency upon Western thinking. Myself as a Native Hawaiian, I'm engaged in this conversation using English as my language. And so I'm limited to express to you what I can say only governed by the English language. So much of what I need to say, I cannot articulate as a Native Hawaiian. So how is it that I expect you to express something that I feel for me in your language? It's somewhat illogical.
Can I ask you as a person from the generation that you came from, if I remember correctly, because I know who this is, that you had experience at Koho'olawe and you've been a part of, you know,
Hokulea,
all these things. What is your reaction to the young generation that is emerging?
Well, thank you for asking that, and I am proud to tell you this. I am fully convinced and totally persuaded that the generation now, who we refer to as the OPIO, these are the 20, 30-something, they've got this, and they should be supported, and that those who are in their 50s and 60s should simply just sit down and shut up.
Ew.
Had an opportunity, and we failed. And if someone could say, no, that's not true, then I'd like to know. Because here in my resume, I was there on the Aina Koho'olawe while they were blowing it up. And when we did religious access, I was on Hokulea in the 70s. I was there in Tahiti. So if you were there, you tell me what crew you were with, where you were in the Pacific, or when you went to Koho'olawe, the times you were at Kalama Valley, or where you were at, and what kupunas you talked to, and tell me what they said. And if you can't tell me that, you simply need to shut up and sit down. So these OPIO, they have it. And what's the worst they can do? What's the worst they can do? So if everyone were to support, and so here's the thing. I have five children that I'm very proud of, and they're within this category. My job is to support them through love. This kapu aloha business that they talk about, I don't get that. I really don't. I come from the generation of kapu aloha with cracks. We are aggressive, and we are pro into getting in your face. We had the Vietnam era as our model for active demonstration against the government. We employed that same type of strategy in looking to win over Koho'olawe. And I can, well, I won't tell you, but I could tell you of the personal sacrifices that were made by the many people who came to support that effort that resulted in personal tragedy and loss for them, only to see that island given to the state and not being used. And it's still used by the military. And then crony capitalism that has given favorable contracts to select groups in the hundreds of millions of dollars to try to remediate the condition of that island that has not been done. So there's so much fluff, and the image has been blurred so much that we can let alone see ourselves, at least the Department of Interior, make a suggestion of federal legislation called the Recognition Bill. The Fed can no more see us than we can see one another. And so what we have here is we have a problem that really needs to be mitigated by the people and not by some of the people. And we can no longer trust on the assumption of what these politicians say that they're going to do. What do they do? What have they done? They've done no more than my generation in their attempt to change the condition. And what we have is we have a consistency of rogue capitalism. It's just rogue capitalism. Capitalism is simply a philosophy, an economic philosophy, whose intention is to improve the quality of life for everyone. Though it is exclusive, it's not socialistic, it doesn't include everyone, but the elitism that's come from this rogue capitalism is too narrow of a group to make the argument for capitalism as it's understood today. But yet, within that expression of democracy, these are opportunities that have been maligned by the courts, by evidence of what's going on Maui, when the people followed due process, bought forward an initiative that they voted on, only to find the federal district court rule against them on a technicality, less the spirit of the law. The fellow calling before is saying that we all should know the Constitution. Well, this is what we know in Hawaii. The U.S. Constitution was written for the continent. It doesn't apply outside of the continental United States. So we do know that. And we do know this. Native people dealt by the Constitution are the Indians, and by the Constitution, the white American can rule over them. And this is something that we're supposed to embrace? Really? Why is it that the Office of Hawaiian Affairs in 2012
on their balance sheet carried more than $500,000, $500 million on their balance sheet. And what did they do with that money? And today we make an argument over Dr. Keanu Tsai, who was paid $50,000 on a legitimate contract. The community is outraged about that. But what about the $500,000 that they sit on? Where is this? I don't know, but I would speculate that this money is sitting in local banks so that those banks can extend and leverage their deposits to make more money. Kamehameha Schools, the largest trust that's been set up for whom? For Native Hawaiian children as beneficiaries. Those assets are managed by whom? By Native Hawaiians? I don't think so. So before the Native Hawaiian can argue for assets that belong to the United States, shouldn't we be more responsible for what is under our own jurisdiction? That's my question. So when we look at Mauna Kea, that's our mountain. And if the merit of what science expresses at the expense of our resource, at the expense of our culture and our health, then that's a different equation that we have to try to work out. And on the issue of health, if there's certain herbs that are grown there on that mountain that are endemic to us to cure the pathogens that are unique to Hawaiians here in this place, and we're denied access to that, isn't that a criminal offense? So what laws are we speaking to? We're trying to save the YQ bug at the expense of a human being? Who's confused here? So as a Native Hawaiian, my impression is all the invaders are confused. And in their confusion, it has resulted in this expression. On Oahu, for every condominium building hotel that's built, you can't grow food. And one of the primary reasons that there's not enough food here on Oahu to feed the people here. It's as bad as Catalina in L.A. Everything's imported. If the distribution system is ever interrupted, what happens here? There's enough food for, what, 3 days, and who gets fed? The tourists in the hotels? What happens? Who's thinking about this? No, but we're talking about seeing billions of light years into the future, and you can't see 20 miles down the road from Mauna Kea down to Kealoha or to Hilo? You can't see that? But yet I'm supposed to be convinced and accept this notion that we need to see 20 billion light years into the future? That's somewhat incredulous to me. I have a hard time with that. I fail to see the logic. So those are simply my comments that I wanted to share, but I applaud your effort, and, you know, nothing's going to happen in one radio show, but I think it's a great opportunity to invite more people to call, to speak, to start a conversation, speaking to the possibilities, not to the limitations, but speaking to the possibilities, and embracing those with aloha, or embracing them with love. So then we can speak to issues of merit and virtue in real terms that can be quantified in terms of value and traded with equity. So thank you, Felicia.
Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your mana'o. And I appreciate, and I'm just giving you a shout out, I know who this is and that you really have a very strong economic background. And so I appreciate what you shared, and I know that that is really the tip of the iceberg from what you have as a professional training and background. So thank you so much, and maybe sometime you can come in the studio.
I'd love to do that. Okay. Aloha.
Yeah. Wait a sec. Ray has something to say to you.
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to say mahalo nui to you, brother. I mean, there's so much deep knowledge in Manawa in there, and there's so much to learn and listen to. I just thank you for calling. I learned a whole bunch just sitting here listening to you, so...
Yeah,
ahui ho. Okay, I believe that we have another caller. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. So I'm this show. This is amazing, and I really appreciate all of this about the mountain. It's so important. And the point that I wanted to bring up, because I haven't heard anybody talk about this yet, is, okay, so we have a court case that was started in 2006 on about Mauna Kea, correct? That is still in process, and that is to make sure that it's, well, to say that it's not valid for them to do what they're doing.
That's correct. That's correct in my understanding.
So, but then we have a governor who says, oh, well, that's okay. We're going to build it anyway. Right? So there's that scenario going on. And then in our scenario on Kauai, we passed Bill 2491. It became Ordinance 960, was immediately sued, but it never went into effect. It's just sort of languishing until we find out what's happening in the court.
That's right. And as we've said numerous times on this show, it seems to be how deep your pockets are and how powerful your entity is, because if the court is ruling on an issue when the people are the plaintiff, it seems to not have much standing. And if the plaintiff is the powerful, then the bias is going to assume that the decision could possibly be made in their benefit. And I think that's because there's layers of I shouldn't say why it is. I don't know. But it's evident that that is a repeated challenge.
So would it be smart of us to actually, you know, go to our county and say, why are you not upholding this ordinance that passed, even though, because look at what they're doing up there. You know, I mean, by pointing out the excess here, it might get them to stop it there. I don't know. I'm being hopeful.
I actually do know, because I go to the council meetings regularly, and, you know, I think they are, for good reason, intimidated economically in terms of how everything is going. But as we all know, in the last election, the vote went to the small majority that is not on this same page. And so we have, before, when we passed this stuff, we had a bias that was in alignment with protecting the schools and the hospitals. And I don't want to say that the existing ones don't want to protect the schools and hospitals, but maybe they don't want to protect it as much.
It's not their priority.
It's not their priority.
Okay, so then, but it's not really them, the council, because they already did their job. They already passed it. Who the job that it really is the administration, which would be the mayor's office. And that's who I think we need to complain to.
Well, I think that, you know, that complaint can continue. I think it's been heard loud and clear. And there's a different political will on that particular issue. And I think you're bringing up...
I mean, I think pressure is really important then.
Well, I'm glad that... there are many people who have been all kinds of ways creative, including this march, because the Unity March was also about, it's about all the aloha aina. It is larger than the mountain. It is larger than this chain of islands. It's really, in my mind, it's about individual sovereignty. It's individual sovereignty, and in what you're speaking of, the right to have clean air and water and that. And thank you so much for calling. I have other calls stacked up behind.
Thank you.
Mahalo.
Aloha.
KKCR, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. It's Uncle Saul.
Hi, Uncle Saul.
I just heard that gentleman from Honolulu, who is very knowledgeable.
Yes, he is.
Very, very knowledgeable, but you never see his name. And he said a lot of good kind stuff, which is very powerful for the people of Hawaii. And he said a lot of things about Kaho'olawe and Hokulea, but the guy never actually mentioned his name. I am. You can tell that gentleman my name. I come from Kauai. I represent the island. I was the only guy, me and my friend Billy Lawrence, that never got caught. We were the only two
at Kaho'olawe. Uh-huh.
At Kaho'olawe, honey. That never got caught, that swam back. Now he says we Kupuna should stop and listen and not say nothing, let the Naupiu take off. How are we going to do that if there's no more knowledge from the Kupuna?
Well, I will say this, is that on the mountain, the Kupuna are there. They are there in force, and they are sitting there in loving protectorship. And they are absolutely have everybody's backs, but really all the generations are sitting back and allowing the young leaders to blossom.
Sooner or later, they're going to have to take over when we pass.
Yes.
He's right, but how are you going, how are the children going to know if no more?
Well, up there, I mean, I think that, that maybe
why,
he stayed.
Hold
okay.
Your thoughts.
All right.
How are they going to fight for something that they don't know what we're fighting for? Because before Naupio came around, I've been fighting. I've been there. I've given up already. My time is up on this earth soon. If no more us, no more leadership, no more Naupio.
Well, one thing I wanted to add to the caller, and I always allow callers to decide if they're going to self-identify or not. I don't reveal names unless they do on their own. What I did want to say to him was that the that generation, your generation, are the ones who did fight for what happened in the Constitutional Convention, did allow the Hawaiian language to be legal, to be spoken, did allow children to be named Hawaiian names, set up these charter schools that helped to raise these kids who are now blossoming now.
Right.
So
that is what I love.
So
because
that,
I can speak my native tongue fluently. And if Barano can let me educate him, yeah. Because, you know, if he can talk English, I can speak Hawaiian fluid.
Well, I will get the two of you together. I think that you will
that
really like each
boss.
Other.
Yeah. You see, my partner, the one that swam back with me, he cannot speak no more because he's dead. He died. I am alive. I'm the only one alive. And you can ask all of the call of your brothers that did stop the bombing, that did stand in front of the gun. I'm the only one that is still alive, that swam back. Thank you very much, Felicia.
Aloha. Mahalo for holding. You are on the air.
Hi, aloha, Felicia.
Aloha.
Hey, I just want to say, I just called a brief, great show tonight. And, yeah, I just want to say mahalo. The Kanaka brother called a couple of calls ago. Yeah, thank you for I needed a good laugh. That thing about kapu aloha with cracks.
Yeah.
I'm still laughing about that.
Yeah, kapu aloha with cracks. It was good.
God bless brother and you, and thank you for a good show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Aloha.
Okay, and just to throw out there a number of other announcements that I do have. Scott Sims' funeral is Sunday, the 23rd. Can you look that up? Is that the Sunday? And it is from 4 to 7 o'clock, and a banner is going to be placed up there. The funeral is going to be at Princeville Airport. And a big, beautiful banner honoring him is being put up across the street from there. And the person doing that had texted in, didn't want to interrupt the show to say that he's doing that and to let people know that it would be appropriate to adorn it with flowers and might be a really nice way for people to be honoring Dr. Scott Sims, our amazing, amazing, selfless veterinarian. Calvin Saffrey's funeral this Friday, 9 a.m. at Waiʻoli Church, the Green Church in Hanalei. We are probably going to have time for one more caller. I want to say that the fair is coming up this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. KKCR is going to be broadcasting live from there. I will be in the booth a couple of days. I'm also going to be in the booth at the Democrat Party booth. I think it's really important to vote. So I will be helping sign people up to vote. Now people can do it online. I know many people feel that it's a broken system, but it is the system that we have. I like what Elizabeth Warren said. If you're not at the table, you're going to be on the menu. So I think there's some real wisdom in that. And so if we don't participate, you know, there can be a consequence. There's a Commission on Water Resource Management coming up and a Division of Wildlife Resource meeting coming up. I will pull them up their times in just a moment. I have one more call. Jazz with John is going to be joining us at the top of the hour. Aloha, you are on the air.
Aloha, Felicia.
Yes.
This is Damon.
Hey, Damon. Hey.
A blast from the past from the old Kilauea Theater.
Yes. I want to thank you, Damon, for having so many wonderful movies and artists and just incredible events that would happen at the Kilauea Theater. I have missed you so much.
Well, thank you so much.
All the ways that you have blessed Kilauea.
Well, I think that's a good example of what mainlanders can do when they come here. It's not all bad. I felt like I did great things in the 10 years I was here to create something wonderful for the community. And the main reason at the end of your show here I was calling is Scott Sims was a great friend of mine. And I think he was one of the greatest men that ever lived. And he was such an influence in my life and to so many others and did so much for this community. And I just encourage folks to come out. I had a banner printed up that I'm going to put on the highway for him. And I was hoping folks would stop and lay some lays on it and some flowers and just show the world as they pass by that banner up to his funeral that he meant the world to so many people here.
And animals, and animals.
And animals. Unreplaceable and an amazing human being. And after all that was said in your entire two-hour show, I think the greatest example is a man like Scott Sims, the greatest revenge against all the evil that surrounds us with all of this materialism is to live well and to live for others selfishly. Yeah.
And that he did.
Awesome.
And that
where is this banner going to be at again?
I was going to plan on putting it on the entrance there before the airport, right across the street on the ocean side.
On the highway, Kuhio Highway.
Okay.
Yeah,
Kuhio
Highway.
In Princeville. It's kind of near
Princeville airport. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
So,
thank you. I should have you call
you so
in sometime.
Much,
you have a lot
aloha
of...
to all your listeners, and Miss Hawaii dearly, and just aloha to everyone.
Okay, aloha. Much love to you, and thank you for all you've done for Kauai.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Marshall, you've been quiet all the show. Thank you for doing a great job over there. Do you have something that someone wanted to share? And then we're going to have time for an aloha. I have two people who've been in the studio, and I'm going to let them just say hi. They're coming in and watching because I'm going to do a show with them sometime very soon.
We had a caller that wanted to let us know that the Water Resources meeting was last week. It's not today.
Okay, it was last week. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. So thank you very much. Ray, do you have a last thought?
No, I just want to thank all of our listeners and our callers and Felicia, your show, and KKCR for having this forum, this opportunity, this place for us to share and connect and let our voices be heard. So, mahalo nui.
Thank you so much for doing a great job in here. And for my space friends that might be out there listening, I have pages that you taught me that I haven't shared yet, and I will bring that up on another show. And perhaps you might want to call in and be a part of the show and share your voice in it. At KKCR, we really like to be able to have the different layers of expression. Jeffrey, bring your mouth up to the mic for a moment here and... say hello.
Hello.
All right. And you've done all kinds of amazing things, and you're a really well-versed writer.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I'm a writer. I write about really everything you're talking about on the show today. And it's beautiful to be here. This is the heart of the community. I can feel it. And, you know, I was a little nervous when you said to come up to the microphone because I've been sitting here choking back tears listening to all these people talk.
Well, you do what we do here nationally. And so we're glad that you're a part of our team. Susan, say hi.
Aloha.
Oops, let me get you there. All right, try again.
Aloha. Susan Kornacki, a 3-year resident of Kauai and a child that goes to school here at the Pu'ukumu School. And also, I just want to say that I think that the global world needs to really hear about what's happening with Mauna Kea and what we're doing here on Kauai and the rest of the Hawaiian Islands. So that is one of the things that I see and feel very passionately that needs to happen.
Thank you. And I appreciate you are also an international voice. Okay, Marshall, real quick, and then we're going to have the county council report and Jazz with John.
Scott Sims' funeral is August 23rd from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Princeville Airport.
Mahalo, Marshall. And mahalo, listeners. This is Kauai Soapbox. Felicia on KKCR, Hanalei KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. And let's listen closely to what's happening at the county council. They're working hard to represent us, and you can help them out by voicing up. So here we go, the county council report.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of August 10th. There will be a council committee meeting Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. in the council chambers in Lihue. Here's some highlights in the agenda. The Public Works, Parks, and Recreation Committee has a request from Committee Chair Kagawa for the county engineer to provide a briefing on the Hardy Street improvements, status of projected construction and completion, including an update on the impact on traffic surrounding the LCH Wilcox Elementary School during drop-off and afternoon pickup time. Committee Chair Kagawa also requests the county engineer provide an update on concerns related to the operations at the Kakaa landfill. The Budget and Finance Committee has a request from Councilmember Hoosier for Department of Water personnel to provide a briefing on their capital improvement projects to include the following: name and description of each project, including the geographic area to be served by this project, whether or not the project is included in the County of Kauai's bond issuances, timetable for the project, and the estimated cost of the project, including funding source, bond issues, and so forth, and the amounts that have been expended or encumbered. The Committee of the Whole has a request from Council Chair Raposo for the Managing Director and the Office of the County Auditor to discuss the audit of fuel costs, consumptions, and management. That's Report 12-01, prepared by the Office of the County Auditor in April 2012, and to respond to the various findings and recommendations cited in the audit. And this was deferred from July 22, 2015. Council Chair Raposo also requests agenda time to discuss the process and details that would be included in a comprehensive noise ordinance. For more information, visit the county's website at www.kauai.gov. Till next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News, and I hope Hilda doesn't visit us this week. Much aloha.